Welcome to Zuma Worldwide's Health Education Conference Call. This recording is for educational purposes only. The name brand products referenced are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or mitigate any disease or illness. Health testimonies represent the personal experiences of the individuals and should not be viewed as medical advice. Please enjoy today's call.
Hey folks, Ken Marsh here on Zoom's Health Education Call. Appreciate you guys tuning in live with us, and as always, appreciate you guys spending a little time to get some health education. That's what this call is about. As many of you know, we do this call the first and third Thursday of every single month. The goal is simple. The goal is to give you information, education, hopefully at some time, some inspiration to ensure that you have the kind of information that you need to live life and live your health, especially more abundantly. And tonight I get to spend some time with a lady who is a member of Zuma's Scientific Advisory Board. I'm proud to call her a good personal friend. She's a naturopathic doctor and has spent many, many, many years of her life helping people like you and I enjoy more health abundance in various different aspects, not just health, but in other areas as well. And most recently, she spends a lot of her time down on the organic farm and helping people get access to some really healthy produce as part of her life's journey here. And I want to make sure she's out there on the line with us. So Dr. Henrietta Albin, are you with me?
I am indeed. Good to see you. Good evening, everyone. It's nice to be here.
Good to have you on the line, as always.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'll just get started on my topic. Is that okay?
Absolutely.
Wonderful. Okay. I have been pondering for many decades self-awareness and the topic of conscious evolution, which these days is much more understandable by many more people than it once was. What is that, conscious evolution? In my book, or to make it simple, because it's not a complicated concept, it's just not perhaps familiar, is that to be consciously evolving means that you as a human being want to grow. You want to grow into your best self, into your highest self, and you want to do it with as much grace as possible, which is not always easy. I can tell you that by experience. So, however, conscious evolution is an ongoing process of growing and learning. And whereas once, like for our parents and even for the next generation down, it might have been, okay, I have to do the studies, I have to get the college degree, maybe I get a graduate degree so I can make more money and I can go into this field and that field. Today, conscious evolution is now merging with what do I want to do with the rest of my life, no matter how old you are. You know, for somebody who's 17, the rest of their lives is all in front of them. However, all of us growing up, absolutely all of us, have received certain training and certain programming and an enculturation depending where ethnicities we have lived with and where we come from and the general idea of not everyone has an idyllic, which is not the best way either, childhood, because you may have figured out that life is challenge. Life is sometimes also a struggle, and life within a body can be painful. What it always is, it always engages with us. Life engages with our body, with our mind, to tackle us, to make bigger steps, to take more chances, to get out there. And so there are lots of ways in which, you know, from the best sales pitch ever to the people who are doing affirmations, to the people who are aware of their intentionality, where they want to go, what they want to do, and all the and who with, and all these things play into the everyday attitude of someone. And attitude, as we all know, is malleable, right? You can choose to say yes to everything. Maybe that's a bit of a leap. However, when we stop resisting, because anytime you have pain, we have been resisting something, okay? I am too tired. I am too bored. I can't take care of another child. I can't do that. And so we tell ourselves these words. And with that, our body says, oh, my God, I'm so tired. I can't do it anymore. And there's a certain It's like a rat trap, like a hamster wheel that happens in the head. I think most of us are aware of when it happens that you just can't get out of the repetitive thinking and the repetitive words that talk about how incapable you are to do something. So the topic tonight is about how can we put an end to it, yes, and also how can we be in a space of being more generous with ourselves. More self-awareness begets more self-care. So when you become aware that you are very critical all the time, this is really not the time for you to go and say, oh, I screwed up, I should not, and this and that. It is not intended for you to ever punish or judge yourself. Self-awareness is simply the signal by which you become aware that this thought that you're having right now does not feel good. So when you have a thought like, I am too tired for this and my day is not over yet, you get more tired. Try the other way sometime. You could try, I am tired and I know I can do this. So that is invoking more confidence from inside. And you, since you have to do it anyway, because you will not quit half-assed, that is a technical term, you will already know that you're going to get it done and that quetching the whole nine yards will not help at all. So self-awareness is, what are your triggers? And I'll get back to that. And what are your most difficult habits that you'd like to break? There are people who can work with anyone. And then there are people, and more of those, who definitely can't, because they get triggered by the people they're supposed to work with. And studies, many studies have shown that, for example, in the workplace, there's usually one or two people who are adversarial, or we perceive them as adversarial, and at the same time, they remind us of family members when we were growing up. So we have this emotional attachment and trigger of negativity that is now being put onto this person at work. The studies have shown that most of us superimpose family relations onto people we work with. And of course, that gets into conflicts almost immediately. So in my work, that is one of the first things I often address with people. What is your trigger? And, you know, people who go to work every day and they see someone on the bus, for example, and that person on the bus likes to talk to them and talk them half to death, in their opinion. And so they have to feel they cannot set any boundaries. They have to listen to it, quite aside from the fact that the bus is probably full. And what if this person's safety was seized? And now you have to listen to them. The trigger is that you have no defense. Right? The trigger may remind you that when adults said something to you as a child, you felt compelled to work with it. You felt compelled to follow through with it. And somehow all of us really dislike being told what to do, because 100% of people, unless they have worked through this issue, 100% of people resent that. Don't tell me what to do. You can't tell me what to do. Stop telling me what to do. I know, you can't tell me that. So, you know, there's a lot of cannot and don't and upsetness. So what would self-awareness do with that? Self-awareness would take two steps back, take a deep breath, not speak for 10 seconds, okay? A very gentle deep breath. Don't do it like you're huffing and puffing from frustration. That's not going to get you anywhere. But take a deep breath. Step back, say nothing, and then think how you want to address that. You could say, you're right. You could agree with the person. And you could also ask the person, did you mean to hurt my feelings? Or is this something you would like to repeat? And for the most part, in contentious situations, people will actually step back and say, no, listen, I didn't mean it that way. And who knows? I mean, in my experience, when I had, there was one adversarial person who triggered me endlessly. And eventually I made friends with him. It was a business relationship. And I made friends with him because I said to myself, I either can do business in this way or I can suffer through my resistance of wanting to do business with this person. And we found out that we're actually quite agreeable with each other. So stepping back, looking at what does this make me feel like? And one of my questions that I ask my clients is, when was the first time you think you experienced that? Where in your family cycle or who in your family resembles that sort of thing? Oh, cousin Charlie. Excuse me. Or sister Sybil, you know, or this aunt or grandma or my mother. Could be anyone. The fact is that the new experience, the trigger, is not then, you are now. And so with self-awareness and knowing your triggers, you have a chance to step back, take a breath, and actually feel in your body what it feels like and soothe that. Okay? You do not have to defend. Defending leads to a cascade of more BS. You don't want that, and it's unhealthy. It may take you a few tries before you get there, and you do not get to judge yourself. That is something that I'm always very clear on, is that judging ourselves after we didn't get it yet, you hear the tone, right, is not permitted. You want to grow, you need patience with yourself. You need to be kind with yourself, and then you will see that things get much, much better. So there are some points to ponder. And one of the things that I have noticed in my women's groups and in other places, and while this call is obviously neutral to gender, my experience has been that women get triggered way more than guys do, or at least being more emotional ourselves, we find ways to get triggered. And sometimes we just need to let off steam, and that would be okay. So if you have a really good friend who doesn't mind your tirades, you can call and say, when is a good time for me to just have you listen. I don't need your advice. I don't need anything. I need somebody good with me to listen to my pile of S. So if you have that, you're very lucky. That's great. The key is not to ask for advice, and the key is for the other person not to want to give advice. The purpose is to be heard so that you can hear yourself, and they are the sounding board. They're not having to give you feedback. Okay. So what I found in this context is once it's off my chest, once it's off everyone's chest, it increases our self-awareness. Oh, this is what it reminded me of, and that's when that happened. So it really isn't about now at all, and this person couldn't possibly know this, but I'm responsible for my triggers, and so that now leads to more self-care. When have I not taken care of myself around this issue, or have I been working nonstop, you know, 10, 12 hours a day, and I have not taken a break for myself? That means when I judge another, when I get triggered, I have not taken care of me. This is a really important understanding. So increase self-awareness, stepping back, breathing, holding the pause for a moment, leads to the self-care of saying, okay, I see, I am overreacting. Okay, let me, and hopefully you have actually not said anything during the step back phase. Let me address the issue in the room and not my emotional reaction. And then later you can go and you can address the emotional reaction. And you can do this by putting your hands on your heart. Most people have it on their chest because sometimes it's the throat that closes for a near panic. But the chest is where the heart is and where we would love to have more love. And so put your hands over each other, put it on your chest, and simply say, I love you, and you love yourself in that way, you'd be amazed. That simple gesture makes so much happen, so, so much. It's really amazing. So, again, the first steps towards self-awareness is stop resistance, find out your triggers, take a breath, take a step back, realize it's not now, realize and take care of your emotions, address the issue at hand, and then step back when you have a chance and take care of yourself. Now, if you're someone who's very active in managing things, that's a lot of pressure. That's a lot of pressure. I can't tell you how many women I know who are the oldest in the family who had to take care of their siblings, never really had a childhood because they were like 8 or 9 years old when there were twins or there were two more children. And with 4 going on 5, because mother kept getting pregnant, there was no room for this girl who became later a woman who was in a very hurt way with her siblings who resented her because she took a mother role because she had to. Her mother went back to work and she had to left her with babies. So there was a great deal of resentment that was very unhappy. And she was so sensitive to being criticized by her siblings that she is in her late 60s now. It took her a whole lot of therapy and a whole lot of work to realize that none of this is valid anymore, and that none of what they're criticizing her for is her issue, because that's their issue. So careful within families when you manage something or when you think you have to take care of more than really is your deal, just because you know how, you set aside time for yourself and you delegate. Everybody can do something. I mean, I live, 10 minutes away from Amish farms. It is so beautiful to see 2-year-olds, 3-year-olds go to work with dad. The girls go with mama and the boys go with dad. And I've seen this so many times. And their body language is very sophisticated. They're not toddling around. They're walking on purpose. They know how to handle tools and they know how to handle animals. And it's a really beautiful thing to see someone this young take responsibility. And yes, they're working all their lives. There's no question about it. And they may still have some issues, but it will not be like us who have not really had a purpose other than to grow up. So I hope this makes sense. The counterpoint to not getting it, obviously, to not get the trigger, can lead to the unrolling of absolutely horrific misunderstandings, making enemies everywhere because you are so very angry and hurt and you can't differentiate between then and now. I suggest there are many different therapies that can be taken advantage of. I really suggest you look at that, and also tapping has been very helpful for many people. I'm not going to get into this because you can just look it up. Tapping, T-A-P-P-I-N-G, can give you a great deal of help. There is one last thing I wanted to say. Oh, and by the way, I am writing a much more expanded article for the late summer or fall issue on this topic, with methods of how to get out of dicey situations or how to speak nicely of where you could be angry, you learn to speak nicely because that is what keeps your dignity, it keeps your power, you are responsible for your words. And if we just blurt out curses and all that, that hardly works ever at all. So this last piece I want to talk about is a concept called the observer and the observed. I think maybe Deepak Chopra has popularized this concept years ago. And the observed is us when we are unconscious. It's us when we're not self-aware. And the observer is that inner being that is much wiser inside of ourselves, the inner being that actually watches from a gentle, farther away vantage point and who can see clearly what it is that you're dealing with. So when we become aware that we can step back into the observer role, that is equal to being able to take a few steps back, take a deep breath, go back in time and see, what is it am I dealing with here? Is this now or is this before? And be very careful, because here the mind does something really interesting. It goes ahead and it insists to be right. So we've all heard the moniker that says, would you rather be happy or right? And it's always, you want to be happy, right? Being right is overrated, but there's so many people who are using it as an action of self-defense that it's very tempting to address them where they are, and you can't. Otherwise, you get drawn into a melee, and that is impossible to solve. So the moment you can step back and get into the observer mode, you can ask your inner heart, your inner being, what is this for? What are you teaching me? And if you're in the middle of the exchange, then you already follow the steps we outlined. And if you have stepped back already and now you're asking the observer, show me what this was, show me what this is about, and how can we take care of it? Because always, in all these situations, what you want most is to find a solution. You don't want to get stuck in that hellhole of self-recriminations and, oh, I shouldn't have said that, and, oh, what I did now. And I tell you, the feeling I get when I'm aware that I was wrong is much worse than when I'm aware that somebody tried to wrong me. I couldn't care less. Well, it depends who it is. But when I know I screwed up, that feeling is in my gut like a hole from a cannonball, and I do whatever I can to set it right. I don't go in all humbled and childlike, oh, I'm so sorry, blah, blah, blah. No, I go in as a responsible person who said, I really didn't need to say that, or I wish I could take that back. Will you forgive me? And if you feel that you need to explain more, you can, but most often people are so relieved to have that apology that they then come back with something that is equal, saying, yes, I shouldn't have teased you this much, or maybe my words could have been better. So these are the things for this call, for this talk. What do you think, Ken? Where are we at?
You know what, Henriette? I love it for two reasons. Number one, the two thoughts that ran through my head as you were sharing this information is, first, I know so many people, by the way, I'm guilty of it as much as probably anybody at times, is our own negative self-talk can be so challenging in so many areas of our life. You know, it's easy for ourselves to look, you know, down on things we did or didn't do, or places we should or shouldn't have been. Or again, there's so much that again, we probably do unconsciously, you know, to our happiness, our well-being, by just negative self-talk. And then the other thing I thought about as you were kind of wrapping up here was, you know, the power of something as simple as forgiveness. And a lot of people hold burdens and resentments against, you know, either others or situations in their life. And you especially, because of all the coaching and counseling you've done with so many people over the years, I mean, you understand how that just creates nothing but anxiety and depression and internal, you know, levels of poor health, like, you know, elevated cortisol and blood pressure. And so I think about, you know, just getting into a place where you're, you know, like you said, practicing self-love, and you understand that you're human, you're gonna maybe not always be perfect, and giving yourself, you know, that latitude and that grace, and giving others the same. Gosh, it does so much for our physical health, but I think a lot of people don't remember or even recognize that sometimes, that that's a direct connection. And so I know for me personally, whenever I find myself in a situation where I'm either harboring resentment or frustration towards somebody, and or maybe harboring it towards myself for something I did or didn't do, I've got to remind myself constantly, you know, take a step back and, like you said, you know, look at it from a different perspective. And boy, it's amazing not only what it does for me mentally, but what it does for me physically too. I mean, I notice positive physical changes. So I love the topic because it really addresses two sides of our health.
And yes, it does. And it's not actually meant to be equal. So I'm referring to your comment, which was very equal. It was very what you do. You create peace. You create balance. But for those of us who need to love ourselves, we don't want to care about the other person right away. We need to take care of ourselves first. because that's the thing where we get managing, where we get codependence, where we get, oh my God, I said this to that person and I didn't mean it. Yes, we can go in and apologize for that, but I do not apply forgiveness of self at that point. To me, the self-love is so, so important, and you have to follow it up by actually doing something nice for yourself. And there is, of course, work in between. I mean, whatever techniques we use, I have a bunch of them at my disposal, but whatever techniques we use, there is liberating that little child from its guilt, from the bane of having been made wrong so many times and judged and cursed and whatnot. I mean, in America, I don't know, probably everywhere, but because there's so much fewer real traditions in so many families for so many different reasons, and that they did not get an even keel growing up time. You know, and very often children were asked to do adult things that that no child should have to do. So when you work with people, or even at Zuma, I mean, when we work with each other, you know, all the other team members or the staff members, all of that, all of these things take a great deal of finesse for anybody in a job or where they work on a regular basis with others, to not just be aware of themselves and others, but to also know that you are your first priority. And I'm going to stick to that.
That's great advice, and I appreciate the clarification on that. And you're right. Maybe this is a good analogy before we wrap up here. It's kind of like when you get on the airplane, right? And they say, you know, if the oxygen mask comes down, you have to put yours on first.
Yes.
Before you can help somebody else.
Yes, that's exactly it. That is exactly it. Yes.
Can you tell I fly in planes a lot?
Yes, it does. It helps. It's active everywhere. I recently saw something on Facebook or YouTube or somewhere, and they used that very example to explain a much more complicated situation. But it breaks it down really simply, doesn't it?
It does. No, and that's the first thing I thought of as you were kind of clarifying here at the end. I was like, yeah, that reminds me of every time I'm on a plane, right? My instinct would be to give the oxygen mask to the person sitting next to me first, but that doesn't help me, and it doesn't in turn help them. And I think in a weird way that analogy is actually really applicable to what you're sharing here today.
Yeah.
Well, Henrietta, as always, I appreciate you taking time out of your schedule and sharing words of wisdom like this with us. I think this was an awesome call. I'm looking forward to your follow-up HealthBeat newsletter that's going to go hand-in-hand with this recording. And so, again, as always, I appreciate you being here.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. I appreciate our conversation very much.